Hey, are you listening to me?
Every word, sweetheart.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 26, In Bed With The Enemy. I originally read that in Bed With The Macaroni. Now, here are your hosts, Tara Arietto and Sarah D. Bunting.
Dave, I think we may need to take you to the eye doctor or neurologist, possibly.
One of each.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Before we get into today's episode, our next Patreon episode is dropping Friday, October 16th. We are going to be watching News Radio Season 5, Episode 15, the episode titled Assistant, and it features a guest shot from one Tiffany Amber Thiessen playing a character named Foxy Jackson. Is she Foxy? You know we think she is. That is available on iTunes, and you can also buy the DVDs. And you know what? I recommend them because it's a good show, even Season 5, the post-Phil Hartman season. Anything else? Thank you to everyone who is, I hope, still buying our book at this late stage. Not a bit, a real book that we wrote, available in bookstores and online and everywhere. Links are available on our website. Patreon.com/againwiththis for that bonus episode. Shall we get into the bed with the enemy?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Let's even up those towels and get it done.
Ah. Let us begin with our C plot. Amanda is surprisingly bad at employment background checks. Amanda, boy, she very ceremoniously leaps into the pool for her morning lap swim and then shrieks for Jake because apparently he never fixed the heater like he said he would. And he can't do it now because he has to go meet clients. She tells him it's good to make clients wait because it puts you in a position of power, which is kind of funny since in the last episode when she was the client, 2 hours early was not early enough. That's why I brought it up in the last episode because it's a real reversal.
I really feel like we should start writing down all of Amanda's rules for successful businessation because she's just full of shit.
Really all over the map. Jake tersely tells her he does not mind helping her out when he can, but he has a job now, so he can't be her on-call handyman anymore just because they're fucking, I'm paraphrasing. So maybe she should hire someone. And that night, Amanda's heading out from her place when a guy in the courtyard shows up looking for her. He is Ted Ramsey from the employment agency, and he's an hour late for his interview. He apologizes, but says he had to clean up after his construction job. He also has arrived without a resume, but the agency will vouch for him since he's done every kind of job for them over the past year, which is not really the best endorsement, but okay. And she does look kind of dubious, but tells him what the job entails, including that it's only part-time, which is fine with him because he's an aspiring actor. And we're supposed to tell from her face that he is charming her, even as she says that she's considering a few other applicants, but checks as she leaves that he lives locally. He actually had to leave his place unexpectedly when his roommate moved out, but he heard some apartment managers get to live in their unit rent-free as part of their salary. So many red flags that Amanda, again, as you said, with her expertise in businessology, should really be noticing as this conversation is going on. But she's not. She does not answer this. So he barrels on saying that she probably thinks he's a flaky kid, which she should think that he is a con artist, especially so soon after her experience with Reed. But he's a hard worker. And if something is broken, he knows how to fix it. And she beams that there is a vacant unit next to hers. That would be Sydney's old place that ordinarily goes for $600, which seems high for a studio back then. But he can have it rent-free plus $200 a month for as many hours as she needs. And that is her offer. He can start tomorrow. She sure does trust that agency that apparently sent him over, I guess.
Oh, yeah, the agency. Mm-hmm. Maybe Kelly sent him.
They have all the best applicants at the agency. So the next morning, Amanda introduces Jake to Ted by the pool. Jake very territorially kisses Amanda in front of him and warns Ted to look out for Amanda's smile. Next thing he knows, she'll have him believing a regular workday is 12 hours long. And when Jake resumes kissing Amanda, Ted is like, I'm going to get back to work now. Later, Allison is already on edge for reasons we will get to in the B plot when she returns from work and finds Ted lurking around in her apartment, claiming that he forgot his tools. And she's like, what were you fixing? There's nothing broken. And he claims a problem with the pipes. And she's like, in my bedroom. And he says, there are pipes in every room, very slowly, as if she's an idiot. And she decides not to argue about it and just asks him to leave. But he does want to argue about it, saying there was a broken pipe. And if she doesn't want him to fix it next time, that's her choice. She says he can if it's an emergency. And he finally leaves, which is when Allison goes upstairs to Amanda's place to complain about Ted and his lurking. Allison wonders how Ted could possibly know there was a broken pipe in her bedroom. And the best that Amanda can come up with is that maybe he is clairvoyant, which, Amanda, again, the red flags, they are everywhere. Like,
there are laws
about
this.
Right.
Jesus.
Billy comes home just then and asks what's going on while they both ignore him. Amanda telling Allison that Ted has free reign to do whatever needs to be done to ensure tenants' safety 24 hours a day. To your point, Sarah, which is not how handymanding or landlording work. Like, you have to give notice. That's actually the law, I believe.
Jesus, we've seen it a million times with Law and Order detectives serving warrants that they shouldn't be allowed to serve.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Mm-hmm. So by this time,
defund Amanda, I guess.
By this time, Billy has actually come up the stairs and tells Amanda not to let Ted into their place unless Billy is there, but then continues talking about the problems Allison is having, which we'll hear about in the B plot, and which Allison did not ask him to do, and which only undermine her completely reasonable position in this dispute. So, you know, as usual, shut up, Billy, but we'll get to him later. The next morning, Amanda's showing Ted the problem with her shower head when she soaks him because they are both idiots, I guess. And he claims to know exactly what to do, but he also has a drill in his hand. So I assume that will be making a pinhole to peep at her from his apartment next door. I guess I am clairvoyant. Jake is by the mailboxes later when Amanda comes home that night, laughing with Ted, who's carrying her groceries. And when Jake takes them, Ted offers to wash her car before work the next day.
Ew.
Take it easy, Ted. Up in her apartment, Amanda talks too much about Ted being eager to do a good job while Jake says nothing. Amanda then accuses him of being jealous, which he denies. She invites him for a nice hot shower, but he has errands to run. And guess what? I was right about the pinhole, which Ted wisely drilled under the soap dish where Amanda would not see it right away, but would definitely see it the next time she or anyone else cleans the tiles, by which time, like, maybe he'll be gone. But it's, you know, it's big enough to read on camera, so it's, like, not small. Like,
yeah, plus, like, if there is a bathtub, like, how do you know she doesn't take baths?
Right.
She seems like a bath taker.
Right.
At which time you are Cafe Bustelo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, in the writer's defense, since none of them is, you know, a felony peeper, mm-hmm. I guess they didn't think this through, which I guess is good at a question mark.
Right. Also, like, based on the placement of the soap dish, like, what is he even going to be able to see?
Yeah, like, maybe he's just really into calves.
Or, I mean, I guess he could see her butt, but, you know, like, in the, you know, her befront, but, like, it's the past. Like, this is in the pre-Brazilian era. Like, you're not going to see a ton. Anyway.
Is that what we're calling it now?
Yeah.
A ton?
Befront?
No.
Oh, a ton?
A ton.
He's not going to see her tuppence. Yes, exactly.
Oh, God. I can't believe how much thought we've given this. We must move on.
We must. Jake comes back to Amanda's apartment later, calling her name. But then Ted comes out of some room in the back and says she's not there. Jake asks why he is there then. And Ted, with a toothpick in his mouth, which is the universal symbol of a smooth smoothie not to be trusted, claims that the window in her bedroom was stuck and she asked him to fix it. Jake says that Amanda never mentioned anything to him, and Ted, even more smoothly, says that Jake isn't the handyman anymore. he understands that Jake made that very clear. And Jake has no response to that specifically. So he just says he's watching Ted. And Ted's like, great. Just Jake hustles him out. Jake comes back later that night to make sure that Amanda's okay and report on what happened with Ted earlier. And she confirms that the window story is not true. Jake adds that the pool heater is still broken. And now Amanda believes Allison's story of Ted lurking around her place. So she's ready to go fire him immediately. And Jake wants to go with her, but Amanda hired him. So she will fire him and goes to confront him. Ted's justifications are not convincing, so she does go ahead and fire him and demand the keys. Girl changed that shit because he is slippery as hell and definitely copied all of those keys with his copious spare time.
Yeah, and do not call the agency to send you a locksmith.
No. So then Ted peeks outside to see Jake by the railing and accuses Amanda of firing him because of her jealous boyfriend, but Amanda stands firm. And Ted hands over some keys and starts packing up his sleeping bag. And back at her place later, Amanda's just finished feeding Jake a home-cooked meal to thank him for taking such good care of her. And they end up in the shower. And downstairs, Ted's back to lurking in the courtyard, hiding from Jane, and then creeping back up and into his old apartment, which Amanda apparently left unlocked after he vacated it. And he goes straight to the old peephole. Like, how did he even know she was going to take a night shower? And also, not to get back to the logistics of this, but like, how hard up were people for seeing naked ladies before the internet? Like, this seems very tame to me. Like, don't peep at people, obviously, duh. But like, just buy a magazine, my dude. My God.
Yeah. Thank you. Jesus.
All right. Glad we agreed. Moving on to our B plot. Allison gets mysterious glimpses of her own dark past. Billy and Allison tour a church with a very chirpy docent or whatever. Billy almost immediately makes Allison regret having made a big stink about participating more in the wedding planning by being a total clod. Clip two.
We have a very good organist available. That'd be beautiful. An old pipe organ playing the wedding march. It's so old-fashioned and romantic.
And yeah, maybe we should just have music on tape.
Billy, part of the experience is that it's real, not pre-recorded.
Yeah, but organ music gives people the creeps. You know, that's why they use it in horror movies.
Perhaps a contemporary feel would be more appropriate, given that you're writing your own vows.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in any event, I'd very much like you two to remain a part of our congregation. We like to stay involved with our young people here, and we provide a full range of family services, including daycare, when the time comes.
Thanks. But we're both pretty focused on our careers right now. It'll be a few years before we start a family.
Yeah, if we have one at all.
If? That's news to me.
Guess we never talked about it. Well, that's what engagements are for, aren't they?
Well, this engagement's not for fucking. We know that much. Yikes. This poor woman being sucked into their drama.
I know. And like another Darren Starverse couple that decided to level up or break up and chose wrong and has talked about none of the big issues ever.
Well, outside.
Also, I hate them both in this scene, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Billy, she sucks. Like, I want to at least feel sorry for her, but she is so Eeyore. I can't.
Mm. Yeah, they're both terrible. Like, they both have completely opposite positions, and yet somehow they're both wrong. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, it is. And now that I've remarked on it, let's just get through this stupid plot line as fast as possible.
So outside, they continue fighting in clip three.
How can we be together all this time and me not know this about you?
Maybe it's because you always assume whatever you want, I'll want to.
It's not so unreasonable to assume you want to have a family. I mean, a house, a kids, a dog, it's the whole point of getting married.
No, the point is that I want to be with you. I have a career, Billy, a life, and there are things I want to do in it and places I want to go.
Fine, me too. But I could see a family in that picture. Eventually, anyway. Are you saying that right now you can absolutely, positively tell me that you never want to have kids?
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
I can't believe this. It's like all of a sudden you're somebody else.
That's ridiculous.
Allison, what is the matter with you lately?
Nothing, damn it. I'm tired. Can we please go home?
No, you're not getting off that easy. First it's this no sex thing, and now it's no kids. What's next? What, no wedding?
Of course not.
Well, then I want an explanation. There's something wrong, and I want to know what it is.
I haven't been sleeping.
Also, somehow we're in Bergen County all of a sudden. Like, every line. Dog, married. I can't do it, Karen. What do you want me to do? I mean, bless his heart. Bless all our hearts. Here's another question I have. Like, he's being kind of terrible, but also, like, how can you even tell that there's something wrong with her lately?
Right.
She's, like, she's always this, like, she's always this much of a pill, kind of.
Yeah.
The specifics maybe are new, but little storm cloud, that's normal. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it is... I guess it's unusual for someone at this, you know, point in history, especially a woman, to say, like, I don't ever want to have kids, and for it not to have come up in all of the time that they've known each other is strange. But
yeah.
So I mean, I sort of see where he's coming from there, that she, you know, it's weird that if that was her position, she never said it before now. But
well, and I would have to go back and see, but like after her whole, like, she had an ovarian cyst situation, right?
Right.
And then it was like there was some relief when that procedure went fine and she would still be able to have biological children if she chose.
Yeah.
And they weren't together at that point, but kind of was, it was heading in that direction. They were roommates. There would have been some discussion about this. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think on the show, basically season one is not considered canon. So, okay.
True. And also, like, this is, of course, something that someone can change their mind about at any point. And, you know, if she were just saying, like, I thought I wanted to have kids, but now I don't. But that's not what they have her say for obvious reasons. But
anyway. Well, it does seem like it would have come up, but mm-hmm. This is TV. So conversations we don't see don't occur.
Of course. So anyway, her saying that she hasn't been sleeping is not enough for Billy. So Allison describes her nightmares of being a child and feeling like something unseen is pursuing her and that she's screaming and nobody hears her. And as she starts to cry, he hugs her and says it's probably just stress about the wedding and her parents' imminent visit. And she says that when these nightmares are happening, it's extremely vivid and real, but he insists they're just dreams. And that night we see little girl Allison in her disturbing dream of locked doors and an unseen man's heavy breathing and hairy hand, and she wakes up alone, gasping. It's not Robin Williams, Dave. It's terrible.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
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 Over lunch the next day, Billy tries to tell Allison that her decision to see a psychiatrist about her nightmares is an overreaction because it's the 90s, but then again, Skip Bayless, so maybe we haven't come as far on this point as I would like to think.
Yeah.
Anyway, a shrink is like $100 an hour, he says, and Billy, not Skip Bayless, and Allison can talk to Billy all afternoon for the price of a beer, he says. She tries to change the subject, and when he won't let her, she tells him that she can't explain the dreams, but that they are very real and very upsetting. He also believes that they are very temporary, which she says he has no way of knowing. And when she mentions what Joe thought about them in an off-screen conversation, Billy pouts that he doesn't know why Allison puts more stock in other people's opinions than in his. So she decides to bail on lunch, and honestly, we give her a lot of shit, but who can blame her? This conversation is dumb. Get out of it.
Yeah. Also, Andrew Hsu is once again, like, has selected the wrong, he only has, like, 1.5 faces, but he chose wrong again.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's like he thinks he's supposed to be doing stuff, and it's like, okay, yeah. were you not briefed on where this is going? Because, no. Anyway.
Yeah. So later, we find ourselves in another one of Allison's nightmares in which her child self ends up alive, but in a kid-sized coffin, holding flowers and looking up at the creepy doll, which now has glowing red eyes, and Allison wakes up not looking very... Pardon?
Of course it does.
She wakes up not looking very rested, though at least Billy slept with her this time, and when he asks, she denies that she had another nightmare and goes to the shower before he asks any follow-ups. And then we're seeing Allison walking in to see Dr. Miller, who is played by Eric Anderson, known to contemporary TV viewers as one Phil Gentry from Sarah.
Felicity.
No, Phil Gentry from.
30 something?
No, I don't know. That's the character he plays in Babash.
Oh. Yeah, sorry. No, I just always am like, Felicity's dad. But he actually played a character on 30-something named Billy, I'm pretty sure. So,
oh.
Yeah, that's how I always think of him.
So there's some dumb banter about her being late and him being younger than she expected. And then he asks if she's ready to get started. And she looks like she's not totally sure. And the next day, Allison and her hideous outfit, which you can see in the visual aids, are out for frozen yogurt with Joe, enthusing about her therapist and how comfortable she felt talking to him. Mm-hmm. He was so reassuring and gentle and smart and gorgeous and sophisticated and well-dressed. And Joe has all the correct concerns in clip four.
Allison, you went for help with your nightmares, and all you could talk about is how cute he is? What did you say? What did you say? I told him about what was going on with work, with the wedding. I did a monologue for an hour, and he just really listened. That's what you're paying him for. I know, but he really seemed genuinely concerned about how I was feeling. Allison, he's your doctor. Do you know how easy it is to get attached to him? They even have a word for it, transference. Joe, it's only been one session. I am just saying that I believe in him, and I was pleasantly surprised.
Right. So what did he say about your nightmares?
Oh, he said that I was certifiably nuts and I should be committed. He said that it could be any number of things, and without knowing me, it's hard to say.
So you're going to keep seeing him?
I made an appointment for next week.
So how's Billy taking this?
I haven't told him.
But you're going to.
No, I'm not. End of discussion.
That's very healthy, Eeyore. Great work.
Like, it's not that I don't understand why she wouldn't want to tell Billy, given the conversation that we saw them have about it. But, like, if this isn't something that you can tell your fiancé, you can't get married. Sorry.
Yeah, correct.
All right. Glad we agree. So we can still get married. Phew.
Since that already happened, also in the 90s, I am very relieved.
That brings us to our A plot, in which the Mancini's financial situation grows increasingly complicated. At the beach house, Michael brings new viewers up to date on the battle over the inheritance and how his claim on it apparently hinges on Sydney's memory of the nice things her grandmother said about him behind his back. He wants her to make a list for the lawyer, but she's been dragging her feet, apparently because she would tune out whenever Graham would start going on about how great Jane is, which, relatable. Speaking of Jane, she goes to see Amanda at her office and ask for a loan. Oh, Jane, hit up Joe first. Come on now. Amanda, of course, immediately says she never loans money to friends. So Jane tap dances that actually it would be an investment in her design business. Oh, no. Clip five.
Oh, no.
I prefer lower risk investments, Jane. And frankly, my offer was only for any financial advice you might need.
I understand that. But at this point, I don't need advice. I need money.
I don't enjoy saying I told you so, but this was inevitable. You spent funds you didn't have.
I know, Amanda. Look, I'm sorry. I'm just angry at Michael for going after my inheritance. And I'm upset with myself for not playing this out better. Maybe I don't have what it takes to be in business. Maybe I'm not shrewd enough.
You know what I'd do if I were you? Take on a partner. Someone who's got the capital for a long-range investment.
I would only be interested in a business partner if I retain creative control.
Well, that wouldn't be an issue for someone who's just looking for a place to park their funds and see some profit down the line.
Great. Well, I'd really appreciate anything you could do to help.
Please. I love doing this.
Doing what? You didn't do anything. You explained to the audience that was dropped on its heads as children what partners are.
Mm-hmm.
Good businessation, Amanda. Why? Oh, my God. Like, when this show tries to make financial intrigue, it's so bad. So bad. Just like, get, you know, have people fake their deaths and then rip their wigs off. Stick to your lane. Please.
I agree. And yet I appreciate that it's pitched at the idiot level where I can understand it, because when soaps try to get too complicated with it and I don't understand, then I feel insulted. And that makes me upset.
Yeah, but that was like one step away from Webster defines business as.
Well, seriously, this is the thing. Like, Tara, has it occurred to you that when soaps try to do businessology, that it's not that you can't understand it because it's pitched too high? It's because they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And sometimes they don't even put a verb in these explanations. Because I think it's that thing.
Oh,
and not that you couldn't understand it if it were actually a thing.
For sure. But I'm thinking of, like, for example, the current Dynasty, the Dynasty revival that's on the CW right now, where there's like, there's always something going on with like Carrington Atlantic, which is an energy company, which is like the same as on the original. But then there's also like a soccer team, and like there's just like always shit going on. And like I never pay attention to these plots at all. Also, someone has a hotel. Like, there's so many businesses where it's like, just get back to the part where people are fucking. I don't care about anyone's money. It's enough. Just say they have it or they don't. That's all I need to know, literally. Anyway.
I mean, okay, but like Dylan McKay's fortune.
Yeah.
Like, that annoyed me that the size of it was always like metastasizing and then shrinking. And it was just like, what is even happening here?
Yes.
I wrote a whole thing about this in our book about the show. Yes. Not a bit. Very special 90210 book. Outrageous fortune. I'm pretty proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
But like that was a smart take on it, that they just like usually hand waved it. But then whenever they tried to be real about how the Peach Pit was run, it's like, guys.
Yes.
No. Yeah.
Right. Because they were never sure. Like they always went back and forth on like, does Nat have a landlord or does he own the property? And like, what extent is, does he own the business? Like, it was the same as what we were complaining about with like Reed and the charter business, which is like, that was also complicated by the fact that it was a scam. But in addition to that, like, was there an owner of this boat or not? Like, what was going on? Anyway.
Yeah. Really... And then when they steal Dylan's fortune back, that's very straightforward, and it's just a thriller plot. And then, okay, right. Kevin fucking trying to fight Dylan with a cutlass. Fine. Mm-hmm. That got a little intense, but it's like, we have to steal this money back. Here's how we do that. Like,
yeah.
No,
I agree.
Don't have Amanda being like, all right, well, what you want is a preferred stock option. And then she like rolls in a whiteboard, and you're like, guys, eye on the ball, please.
All right. Well, speaking of which, let's get back to it. So, cut to the hospital. Yeah. Where Michael finds out the person he's been paged to see is her, Amanda. She tells him she already knows all about the case with the inheritance, and says if he invests his half of it in Jane's company, then she won't contest the will. And Michael's like, no. So Amanda notes, the more that he and Jane fight this, the more likely it is that any money either of them might get is going to be eaten up in lawyer's fees. Plus, she knows Michael still has feelings for Jane, blowing past his scoffing denials to say that while a court battle would push them apart, a business partnership would bring them closer together. And naturally, he's suspicious about what's in this for her, much as you were, Sarah, and dubious that she's just helping out a friend. So she says she'll take a 10% finder's fee. He counters with 5. She's fine with that if all advertising for whatever this ends up being goes through D&D and they shake on it. And then clip 6.
You sure you don't need a physical while you're here?
Oh, gross. Come on. Yuck.
Oh,
she says no. So this scheme, like, again, it's dumb, but I understand it. And it feels like this is crazy. It's so crazy. It just might work. Like, it makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, it really is like they're also positioning Amanda as like the bitch who doesn't care. And that's right. Fine. Mm-hmm. Fine with me. Like, this doesn't exactly make sense, but it doesn't have to, because it's just an excuse for people to like storm in and out of rooms and scream at each other, which is the point.
Exactly. So Amanda arranges for Jane and the investor to have lunch together. And is, of course, as soon as Jane sees who it is, she storms out, and Michael orders Amanda to go earn her 5%, which she does at the valet stand in clip 7.
You'd sell out Mother Teresa. The reason I'm a good business person is I don't let my emotions get in the way. You want to be a loser? Just keep playing victim. Not only did you betray my confidence, you brought Michael into this when I am trying to get him out of my life. No matter what you think, I am on your side. Michael is a willing investor, and he believes in your talent. If you contest the will, you'll lose everything in court costs and wind up with nothing. I can't do this. Jane, don't be stupid. The law is going to give him half. This is your only way to take it back.
Again, this makes sense to me.
And the fact that Amanda found a way to get her cut of something that's like family business that she should stay out of. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Jane gets all the way into her car before she realizes that Amanda is right. And then Jane stomps back inside and sets her terms, which are basically that they split expenses and Michael keeps Sydney out of it. Good luck. Jane also states she'll design whatever she wants, as if she feared that not defining that would mean that Michael would try to horn in with a line of suspenders or something. But whatever, he's fine with that, too. And after she has stomped back out again, Amanda states her terms in clip 8.
You have 24 hours to pay me my finder's fee in a certified check, at which time you'll receive an exclusive contract for D&D services. If you don't sign that contract in 48 hours... I'll talk Jane out of the deal.
I doubt it.
I'm not Jane, Michael. I can't find one redeeming quality in you, and I never have.
I have a cameo to show you, young lady.
I'm not Jane is such a good line, and the timing of it, like when he's like, I doubt it. She's like, I'm not Jane, fucker. Like, yeah, she's not. And that's a great point. Like, she's not a chump.
Yeah. He also sort of cuts his eyes in this, like, well, worth a try way. Yeah. That is so good. Such good mm-hmm. villains.
So that night at the beach, Sydney lurks in the doorway while Michael on the phone tells Jane she doesn't have to change the name of her company. It was just a suggestion. And after he hangs up, Sydney comes in to ask what that was about. And Michael casually tells her it was just business and that Sydney can stop working on the list. Jane is not contesting the will anymore. Only when she specifically asks, does he tell her why and how? Which, like, how long has he been home? Like, not saying anything, but whatever. He says he'll make the money back since Jane's very talented. Citation needed. This just triggers Sydney's insecurities, which are, of course, as we've discussed many times, never far below the surface. Clip 9.
I'm talented too, Michael.
Making money lying on your back isn't exactly what I'd call talent, Sid.
You try it.
She grabs a knife.
I knew why you're doing this.
Look, it's strictly business, so don't worry about it, okay?
I don't trust Jane. And I don't trust you either. What's going on?
We have an arrangement. I buy you furniture, and you annoy me as little as possible.
Get off my couch.
Hey, come on, Sid. Put the knife down.
I don't care about the furniture. Tell me you don't still love her.
He stabs the hell out of the
couch. Couch. I'm not replacing you.
Tell me, damn it. Tell me!
You want to trash the place? Let's go for it. I'm getting a beer.
Michael.
you're messing up your own house. Like that line in Goodfellas.
No. I never understood that.
This isn't teaching him any lesson. He is just going to leave and expect you to clean it up. And then you will. Like, and then you're out of couch. Come on,
yeah,
Sydney.
And
use your
feathers
head.
Are everywhere, and they will be for 2 weeks.
Forever, yes. Ooh, so the next morning, Michael, of course, tells Sydney he hopes she plans to clean the place up. He also does not intend to replace the couch. She is barely paying attention because she's riveted by a TV report about Lauren, her old madam, getting arrested. He cracks up and leaves, ordering her again to clean up, and she smirks that she has everything under control. So she goes to see Lauren in the county jail. Lauren, in her orange jumpsuit, looks fucking flawless. You can see this in the visual aids.
She has a collar popped and everything. It's great.
Oh, my God. She is one of, like, four white women alive who looks good in orange. Even her 80s hair, like, suits her cheekbones and jawline. Like, I think when I was doing the visual aids for this episode, I, like, tweeted this and was like, I did not look this good on my wedding day. She looks so pretty. Anyway, go to visual aids and tell me I'm wrong. You can't. She however, kind of salty, given her circumstances. And not interested in Sydney's chirping about the stuff she brought to make Lauren more comfortable, like cigarettes, makeup, candy. All Lauren needs is to get out of there, and she's pretty sure nothing in Sydney's purse can help, so she, you know, hangs up the phone. But Sydney gets her back and admits she has another reason for coming there. She doesn't think that Lauren's little black book and her stable of girls should go unused while Lauren is locked up. She is proposing a partnership. She is the only one who has the drive to do this. They'll split the profits down the middle, and when Lauren's back out, they'll renegotiate. Lauren is half disgusted and half impressed. Speaking of half disgusted, over to Jane Mancini Designs, where she and her two employees are toasting to their first big order. Sydney walks in, and the male employee, Kevin, remembers her by name from when they very briefly worked together at Kay's. She immediately makes him regret being cordial in clip 10.
Well, don't let me keep you from your work. We don't pay you to stand around and yak.
Got this yesterday from the design center. Do you like it?
Yeah, I really do.
Sydney, what are you doing here?
I came to check out our investment and place an order. Wholesale, of course. I'm a personal shopper for a group of these really cool women, and I need a dozen totally sexy dresses.
Can we speak privately?
Yeah, sure.
The place looks great.
Sydney, I don't want your business. I don't even want you in here.
That's really too bad, Jane. We are partners.
No, it's an arrangement between me and Michael, and neither one of us wants you involved.
Well, I'm Michael's wife, and that automatically gives me 25%. Why can't you just deal?
I don't have time for this.
I came here to help you increase our business. You really should learn how to accept help, Jane. Gotta run now. Got a manicure.
Kevin, I want you to keep two ledgers. One for us to show our profits, the other for our investors to show our losses.
Jane, look, I really do want to help you, but I can't cook the books.
You know Sydney and you know Michael. Now, do you want to help me eventually buy them out or not?
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, my God, Jane. You make it impossible to root for you because you're so dumb and you suck at sucking.
Yeah.
That makes any sense. Yeah.
Also, you're almost certainly going to lose money without him cooking the books anyway. So
we've seen your designs. It's yeah. Oof. You don't have to juice that situation, I don't think.
No. So then Michael gets home from work to find Sydney throwing a sexy party at the beach house. He demands that she throw all the girls out and is furious when she excitedly tells him about taking over Lauren's business, given, you know, the illegality and the risk to his career. But she points out that he already broke the law and got away with it, so why not do this too, making tons of money for no work or effort? And he seems convinced, and that's where we leave it for these two, so... Good job, Sydney. She is talented, it turns out.
Yeah, I guess.
I guess we'll see. All right, let's close this up by naming our episode MVP. I mean, whoever styled Lauren, because I'm in love, yeah. Honestly.
I mean, I guess I'll say Amanda.
Yeah. She moved
Except,
the ball.
No, I really can't because Ted.
Right.
I don't know. Dr. Felicity's dad? Sure. I don't know. Everyone's horrible. His sweater vest was also horrible, but he, you know, he's innocent in all of this.
All right. Fair enough. Least valuable player. Billy, if your fiance says she needs therapy, support her and let her get it. God.
Jane, you're dumb. You should have just let him have half the money and maybe not taken a lease and made a sign. And.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next time on Again With This, Michael blackmails his boss, Allison dates her shrink, and literally nobody is better off Ted. You'll be better off pre-gaming with Malox before you peep the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You'll find those on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our book, Not a Bit, in whatever format you like. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 or become non-silent partners of our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm lower risk investment Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Mother Teresa Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is very good organist David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh.
What?